بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. Dear brothers and sisters, سلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. We had reached slide number 38. If you recall the all-important equation of annual gains minus ma'one, all in brackets, then divided by 5, after a given year, that is the amount that you have to pay in relation to your khums. But now the question arises as, what exactly is happening? What is the mechanism of action here that we are dealing with when you give the khums? In slide 38, the title is When X, any X item, any given item, has the khums levied upon it, and then after a given year, the khums has to be paid. If you remember, leviability is one thing, payment is another. The manner that the khums is levied and paid is conceived in different ways. So let's say someone has £500 after they go through that equation and they get a given khums year has now passed, and we spoke about different aspects of the khums year in our previous session. But now let's say £500 is left, and naturally the khums that needs to be paid is let's say £500 of annual gains remains at the end of the year. Then you divide it by 5, and £100 has to be given as per your khums duty. So let's call X £500, and let's call the khums amount K. Here, according to the majority of the jurisprudence, the khums amount, which is in our case £100, is applied equally upon all particles of X. That's the popular position. So if X is £500, your khums amount, K, is 100. But this khums amount is divided equally in every particle, in every penny of the £500. So a fifth of every penny of the £500, the khums is levied on that, and the khums of that has to be paid at the end of the year. So with every penny of the £500, a fifth of every penny, that is what you're paying, that is what is being paid when you give £100. So here they say the khums is equally distributed in the actual concrete thing, X item. In this case, it's £500. It's equally distributed in every penny particle of the £500. So that is the popular position. And so here, if you remember the handover process, in this £500, let's say you were not able, or it would cause you burden if you were to give the khums, the £100, all in one go. Here, if you recall the handover process, according to this majority position, when you give the £500 to the religious authority, and then they give it you back as a loan, and now you can pay the loan in your own time. Here, when you give the £500 to the religious authority, the concrete distribution of the khums, which was in every penny, a fifth of every penny of the £500, is given to the religious authority. You've done your duty. You've given it. That which they give you back now is a loan. It's a new title. It's not Homs money anymore. You've done your duty there, and now they're giving you a loan of £100. So when you give them £100 Homs, then they will replace it and give you a loan. Then you can give back the loan in your own time. The point being that the £100 that you gave was the accumulation and the total sum of a fifth of every penny of the £500. And that much you gave. You've done your duty. So that's very important, because with this position, if you were not to give the Khums of the £500 or any other X item, since the Khums is distributed throughout, in and out of that X item, and you haven't given its Khums, here it's as if you're usurping the Imam's money. Even if you were to, for example, if you have, let's say, 10 kilograms of rice, which is left over at the end of the year, and that's all that is left over, for example. Here, a fifth of every grain of rice, the Khums will be levied upon it. The same applies. And so if you were not to give the Khums of that rice, what you are eating is usurped rice, because the Khums and the property of the Imam, the 12th successor of the Holy Prophet, was distributed in every grain of the rice. And so were you not to give the Khums and you were to consume that rice, it's going to cause problems. Now we're going to go through some examples at the very end, and maybe it will continue until the next session. So even if you haven't understood it fully, this concept, we're going to go through it soon again. Then we have a very small minority position, and that it pertains to Ayatollah Khomeini, where he says this Khums amount K, which is due now after a given year, let's say £100, is transferred upon one's shoulder. Being transferred upon one's shoulder is a metaphor for example, it's a liability. You're indebted now. It's a liability upon you. It's upon your shoulders now. And this is a minority position. The difference is here that the likes of Ayatollah Khomeini, they don't say that the Khums is distributed in and out of the actual concrete X item. They say no. Here, they calculate the Khums, it's £100, but this £100 has nothing to do with the concrete item which is left at the end of the year. It goes upon your shoulders. It's now a liability for you. And now you have to pay it. It's a responsibility for you. But it's mutually exclusive, the £100, from the that which is left at the end of the year, in this case £500. What does this mean? It means that even if you don't give your Khums, and with that, with your annual gains, let's say the £500, you don't give your Khums, and then you buy and sell with that £500. Whereas with the previous position, you're buying and selling with usurped money, and that has different connotations, which we'll come to when we reach the example section. But with this position, that buying and selling would be okay and sound, because the Khums isn't penetrating the actual concrete £500. It goes upon your shoulders. It's a liability. Yes, it's still a sin when you delay liberating yourself from this liability, because it's a debt you have towards the 12th Imam. It's the 12th Imam's money at the end of the day, that £100. So here, already you're seeing a difference between these two positions. And then we're going to go through many other different scenarios, inshallah. And then we have a third position. This is also a minority, and that is that the khums amount can qualify within any part of X, as long as K amount, the khums amount, remains, one can exploit and use X. So X was £500, the khums amount of that was £100. Here, the Arabic here is al-kulli fil mu'ayyan, which means the general aspect of the specifically the specified amount. So the specified amount here is £500. Now, the general aspect is K, meaning this general aspect of £100, which is the khums amount, it can be any given, that's what general means here, any given £100 of this 500. It's not distributed within every penny. So as long as £100 remains, you can keep on using the remaining amount. You can use £200, £300, no problem. As long as £100 remains of that amount. Naturally, when the khums year arrives, you have to give it quickly. But let's say for whatever reason, there's a delay in you paying K amount, the khums amount, it's okay. There's no need to panic. Here, as long as K amount remains, the £100 remains, you can exploit and use the other portion of the money. That would be okay. But you can't spend, for example, £401, because then you've spent K amount, and K is not yours. Okay, just one marginal point, and that is Ayatollah Jawadi Armani has stated that this third position is more of a lenient disclosure by the religious authority. And what he means is that those religious authorities who have given this position, their original position is that of the first, like Ayatollah Sistani. But as a gesture of leniency for the duty bound, so that life doesn't become very complicated and difficult, they've offered this disclosure that you can spend, as long as the K amount remains, you can spend of the remains of that X, as long as K amount remains though. That's just a kind of token of leniency. Not that this is an independent position on its own. Now, this is Ayatollah Jawadi's interpretation of this. Otherwise, there are maraji, religious authorities today, who have this position, and amongst earlier scholars, they did have this position, and they introduced it as a fatwa. Okay, now let's go through some preliminary points, slide 39. So first of all, it's important to establish that the order to give khums, the command to give khums, is for natural persons, not legal persons. Natural persons are just people like me and you, the individual duty-bound who has responsibilities of his or her own. And the khums is for these individual persons, the duty-bound. Not for legal persons. In law, they differentiate between legal entities, legal persons, and such as banks or different institutions or organizations, and natural persons like me and you, very particular individual people. And concerning the laws of the Quran in generally, there's a primacy of natural persons that is always presumed. So the commands given in the Quran, the primacy of presumption, i.e. that which you must always presume as the first course of action whenever a law is given in the Quran, is that that law is directed to natural persons, not legal persons. And examples of legal persons, as I've said, banks, institutions, organizations, governments, and so on and so forth. Now, there's just one small note, and that is, assuming a given property or capital of a legal person, such as a bank, pertains to natural persons. So the capital is traced back to individual people. Individual natural people. In such a case, although it's an institution like a bank, but it's traced back to natural persons, here too, the rules of Khums will apply to those people. And an example of that is with a private bank, which is, for example, led and owned by, let's say, two people. Those two people would have to calculate their Khums. But with a public bank, which is governmental, here that would be seen as a legal entity, a legal person, and no khums is directed towards them. Okay. Another general point is that the duty of khums, it applies to the pre- and post-pubescent phases of the duty-bound life. But there's a difference in the two phases, responsibility-wise. So at puberty, where now the male or the female, after puberty, now has a number of responsibilities. They now qualify as a duty bound, and they must now abide by their duties to the best of their ability. And one of their duties is, one of the ibadat is that of khums. Now, here, first of all, the khums, its rules and regulations apply to all, be you poor, affluent, be you pre-pubescent, i.e. you're during the phases of pre-puberty, or post-pubescent, like adults, for example. Now, in relation to the pre-pubescent child, let's say a child who's a male child who's, let's say, 11, and they haven't reached the age of puberty yet, or 12 or 13. Now, assuming a property per se of a pre-pubescent child is levied with the khums. So the khums is levied on the actual thing. And if you remember, we divided things which the khums is levied upon into seven classes. Here, this is referring to the first six classes, all of them except that which remains from your annual gains. So here you have a given property. A child has a given property. It can be a treasure. They received it as a gift through inheritance. Although with inheritance, there is no khums. Maybe that isn't a good example. But it's theirs now, a treasure or halal money, which is blended with haram. The different classes which we had mentioned from 1 to 6 in one of the very earlier slides in session 1 or session 2. Here, now the khums is levied on those things that we mentioned from class 1 to class 6. All the classes except number 7, which was in relation to annual gains, that which is left over. So with class 1 to class 6, and examples were like treasures from the sea, on the land, and different things. Here, if a pre-pubescent child was to suddenly own such a class of material or item, here, since they are still pre-pubescent, it's the duty and it's obligatory for the canonical Sharia wali, guardian, to execute its payment then and there. Because in those classes from 1 to 6, there wasn't a 1 year given respite period. They have their own rulings, which isn't like class 7, although we haven't discussed those because we said it's not very relevant for those living in the West today. And so the wali, the canonical guardian, would now have to give the khums on behalf of that child, as that child's guardian, then and there, were the child to gain such a treasure, for example. However, in relation to class 7, concerning the profit gained through, let's say, trading with the prepubescent's property, or the prepubescent, for example, although we don't condone it in any way, but let's say a 12-year-old is working and earning money, for example, and has an income of some sort. Here, this kind of profit gained, the execution of the khums in this case, by the canonical guardian, is not obligatory. So in relation to class 7 and the earning which the child is making, either through it's the child's property or through working, here it's not obligatory for the canonical guardian to give the khums there and then. And in this exception, in class 7, which we've mentioned here, assuming any of the aforementioned profit made, which is not obligatory for the canonical guardian to give there and then, if any of this profit remains, because it's not obligatory to give its khums, so it may keep on accumulating the profit that the child is making. If it's all spent, it's all spent. There's no khums levied upon it. But if some of this profit made during the childhood years remains with the child until the age of puberty, here, according to obligatory precaution, the khums will be levied upon that child. And the reason for this precaution given is that maybe this child, when they reach puberty, maybe they have a year from the time they reached puberty, they have a year from puberty until, you know, 1 year afterwards, they still have, they can spend, for example, from that profit. And then after 1 year post-puberty, then they have to calculate their khums. This is possible here. And so some religious authorities have given this ruling of obligatory precaution. They haven't given a fatwa here. And that's only if assuming some profit remains in those childhood years, and at the age of puberty, some of that profit remains with them. They say the wali, the canonical, not the wali, sorry, the child now who has reached puberty, it's their responsibility to give the khums there and then. But this is an obligatory precaution, so you can refer to another religious authority. If you want, you can go to the next in line. And the reason, so here now, you've reached puberty, it's your duty. So now it's not the duty of the wali anymore. You've reached your age of puberty, the responsibility starts, although you can get guidance from others sometimes if you don't understand what your responsibility is. But here they say obligatory precaution because maybe from puberty onwards, maybe the 1 year respite period starts now. So maybe they're afforded a 1 year after reaching puberty. So here, because of this doubt which may exist, they say the khums, any profit that remains up till the puberty of the child, its khums will be levied according to obligatory precaution at puberty. And in brackets, the reason for precaution, maybe he or she has a year starting from puberty to spend from the profit and only after a year pay one's khums. And since there's some doubt in relation to which scenario applies, here obligatory precaution has been given by some religious authorities. So what we've said so far on this slide applies to Ayatollah Khamenei. Okay, but in relation to Ayatollah Sistani, he states that the minor's property, the minor's belongings, of all types, in all classes, from 1 to 7, including leftovers from your annual gains. With Ayatollah Khamenei, 1 to 6 was ruled in one manner, and class 7 belongings was ruled in a different manner. With Eutel system, there's no difference. In relation to all 7 classes of homes, in relation to all 7 belongings of homes, the homes is levied. And here, the canonical guardian, the wali, must give the homes on behalf of the minor from the minor's property. And if the wali does not do so, the minor must do so him or herself when they reach the age of puberty. So that's one significant difference here between these two religious authorities. Okay. Slide 41. Now, the next point we had mentioned was that the khums applies to the affluent and to the needy, the less affluent. Merely being poor and needy, however, just because you're unable, for example, to pay at a given time, or being in a state of struggle to pay or execute one's khums, it does not free one or exempt one from one's duty of khums. And this, therefore, it doesn't entail a cancellation of your duty in relation to the khums. The khums is still upon you. And there are ways that you can pay it back. Although there may be exceptions where you will be liberated from giving the khums. That's what we want to discuss now. Ayatollah Khomeini says that concerning those upon whom the khums becomes obligatory, but have yet to pay it, and who currently don't have the ability to pay, or even if they did, it would be burdensome for them. Here, it's obligatory, it's wajib, for them to pay this debt whenever the capacity arises, i.e., in this case with Ayatollah Khomeini, one is granted extra time, but this requires the religious authority's permission. So this is Ayatollah Khomeini's position. It's as if there's an extension for one's dhimme. Dhimme is what we said, upon one's shoulders. So with Ayatollah Khomeini, let's say if you had £500 left over, you have to pay £100 khums. But if you were to pay the £100 khums, you would struggle. It's going to be very difficult for you. Here, you have to go to the religious authority or his representatives, explain your situation. They will extend you that which is upon your shoulders right now, because a year has passed. It's upon your shoulders to pay the £100. But it's a bit difficult. You ask for an extension. So if you can have an added year or an added 6 months to pay off that £100, which is upon your shoulders. It's in your dhimme, so to speak. Okay, now here, without such a permission, if you don't go to get the permission, and this is upon your shoulders to pay it right today, and you haven't asked for an extension of your dhimme, extension of it remaining upon your shoulders for more time, here you would be continuously sinning if you don't get that permission from the religious authority who's acting on behalf of the 12th successor of the Holy Messenger. Okay, it's as if you haven't given your debt on time to the 12th Imam and you're comfortable about it and you don't care. Say, I'll give it later. This is a sin. Now, here, so with Ayatollah Khomeini, this was the ruling. So if you can't pay or it causes burden were you to give the £100, it's upon your shoulders. You go to the religious authority, ask for an extension, and that would help. So you still have to pay it. But you're granted more time because in 6 months' time, you will have the capacity, for example. And that's okay. They'll allow it for you. With Ayatollah Sistani, what they undergo in such circumstances where if they were to give their khums, they would struggle or be burdened, Here they undergo the process known as handover, and we've described that in previous sessions, where one hands over one's khums to the religious authority or the representative of the religious authority. And when you hand your khums, you've accomplished your duty, and then you receive that £100 back, but this time as a loan. And then this can be returned to the wali, the religious authority, or his representative over time. But remember that with Ayatollah Sistani, since he believes the khums is levied on the concrete thing in and out, you're giving the concrete khums to the religious authority. And therefore, you've freed yourself from your khums. And now what you spend from your annual gains, that which is left over after you've given your khums, is not the 12th imams anymore. You've freed your duty. That which was the share of the 12th imam, you've given and you've liberated yourself. Okay, so that is one difference again between the two maraji. Now, in this series of khums, we haven't discussed two major areas of khums, and that is, one is in relation to debts and how the khums rulings apply when you are indebted. That is a whole domain of its own, and it requires one or two lectures. And also, we haven't discussed the term capital and investments. These have not been discussed, and what is the ruling of khums in relation to them. But since now we're speaking about not being able to give the khums when you are burdened, sometimes you may have capital or an investment, or you've, and I want to describe one or two examples here. Now here, we'll pass through these next two slides very quickly, but this is something we will, inshallah, come back to in another series. But we haven't discussed them in detail here. But only for completion's sake, I want you to have some idea of what is at stake with when it comes to capital. So, if one has a capital through which one makes a living, for example, the taxi vehicle for the taxi driver, or the dental or medical instruments for the dental or medical surgeon, for example, the shop for the grocer. Okay, it's also a capital, assuming they, for example, if they bought it, for example, it would be a capital through which they sell their grocery. Or a bank profit account, an account which gives you profit every month. You've given them an initial sum of money and you receive installments on a monthly basis. That initial original money is a source through which you are earning or gaining money. Now, all these are examples of capital. You can think of your own examples too. Here, assuming giving its khums, because when you purchase capital, what have you purchased it with? You've purchased it with your annual gains. And these capital, like the dental instruments and the taxi car, these things don't become depleted. At the end of the year, these things exist with you. And therefore, in reality, they are still annual gains. So the khums of the capital that you purchase, capital through which you work and earn money, they're not depleted. You still have the dental instruments. The khums of these have to be paid at the end of the year. Why? Because they are your annual gains. They qualify as your annual gains. Now, assuming giving the khums of this capital will lead one not to be able to earn a living anymore, or it would lead one to change to a job which is below one's status. So if one of these two exceptions arise, were you to give the khums on your capital, and an example is, for example, a dentist being forced to relocate to a lower socioeconomic location. For example, they are based in one part of the town, and now if they were to give their khums, they would have to relocate and work in a part of town which they're not used to. Here, such a capital would be deemed as one's ma'uneh, Because if you were to give the chums on that capital, you wouldn't be able to have a living anymore. Therefore, in such a case, this capital that you have, and you haven't given its chums yet, but if you were, you were going to struggle, this capital would be deemed as your ma'une, because it's essential for your livelihood. And you can't give its chums because it will cause problems for you. And here, no chums will be levied on it, because hardly anything from the capital and its profits will remain for you in the succeeding year. So, no chums will be levied, but the reason why no chums will be levied is because in reality this capital is deemed as your ma'one, your livelihood expenses. Because were these to be given away, you would struggle livelihood-wise. So it's as if one-fifth of it is your ma'one, and therefore ma'one has no chums on it, and therefore you don't have to pay its chums. This was Ayatollah Khamenei's position in relation to people who are struggling. What is the ruling of Homs in relation to their capital? Okay, but with Ayatollah Sistani, he dictates that the necessity of the handover process has to be the first course of action. Okay, you can't pay the Homs on this capital. What you can do is do the handover process. Ayatollah Khamenei has not said this, to the best of my knowledge. He has not given this interim course of action. But Ayatollah Sistani says, okay, you can't pay the capital, okay, that's okay. Do the handover process, and whenever it's feasible, in gradual installments, you can pay it back later. However, let's assume that these gradual payments, you would not be able to pay it back later. Gradually, it's not feasible, because the aroma, the bitter aroma of bankruptcy is on its way, and you will not see yourself being able to pay that khums money even in installments later. In such a case, Ayatollah Sistani says that even that much khums is not necessary, so the handover process won't be necessary either. Okay. And here, just a classification of what we mean by capital. It can be divided into two classes. Please remember, we haven't discussed this at all. These are themes that we have to go in more detail. The capital itself requires five lectures to go through this capital, or maybe four. Class A capital is capital which is itself, per se, a belonging through which one transacts. In Arabic, malut. Tijara. It's a capital, and with this capital you transact with it and make a profit. So the clothes of a clothes shop, the clothes itself, with the clothes, the item of clothing, you do the transaction with the item of clothing itself. You give it and get money in return, and you get a profit. Or the DIY materials in DIY centers, for example. Or, for example, cans of Coke in a confectionery shop. You give them and you sell them and you receive, for example, the cost in return, and you make a profit. All these are examples of capital. The cans of Coke in a confectionery shop, for example. But sometimes the capital is not malu tijara itself, i.e. you're not doing transaction with the actual item, you're not making a transaction with it, okay? But here in class B capital, it's a capital which is used to gain profit, but you're not buying or selling that actual thing itself, but you're using it to gain profit. For example, the drill and saw of a carpenter, the scissors of a barber, the spade of a farmer, the shop for a supermarket owner. In all these examples, you're not buying and selling the actual thing. The spade is not sold. You're not making the transaction with the spade itself. But you're working with the scissors or the spade or the drill and saw. You're working with them to gain profit. So here you have to differentiate these two forms of capital. And in these two, whichever one it is, at the end of the year, these all, you bought all these with your annual gains. So at the end of the year, the khums will be levied upon them. You have to pay the khums on these things. But here there's a subtle difference again between Class A and Class B. I'll go through it very quickly for you to have in your mind, but inshallah, over time, we'll go through this in much more detail. If you look at the bottom of slide 43, by way of example, if during 1 year one had purchased food materials or other materials to work with, so here food would go under Class A, materials to work with to gain profit would go under Class B, and you make a profit through different transactions that you make, although these are bought through one's annual gains, Class A and Class B capital, you've bought them with your annual gains. In contrast to Ma'one, these Class A and Class B, they still remain with you. They're not depleted like with Ma'one. And so since they still qualify as annual gains, their khums would have to be paid. And then when you pay them for the next year, they're all khumsated. And only their profits would have to be paid for. The profits would have to be, the khums of the profits would have to be given. Because once you've given the khums of your capital, that's done until the end. But the profits which you make on a yearly basis, that which remains from them, the khums has to always be given on the profits. But here there's one point here. That's the general equation. But with food materials or sometimes you have a shop, the scissors of the barbers, that always remains with you. But with food or clothes, here, you've bought, let's say, 20 boxes of Coca-Cola. Here, an amount of this will remain at the end of the year. Would you still have to give the khums on that? Here, we have to enter a few finer scenarios, and they are if you were able to sell them but you didn't, you stored them somewhere. If that's the case, yes, you would have to pay the khums on it. But let's say you really weren't able to pay the khums. You weren't able to sell them. Do you still have to pay its khums there and there? There are some finer, minute details that has to be discussed. But so there are differences there. But in general, what you purchase capital-wise, you have to give the khums on them. That's the common equation here. And with Class B, it's very clear. With Class A, there are finer details. Inshallah, we'll leave that for another time. Now, in page number 44, here, although now we're approaching towards the end of our period, I think since there are some questions, we'll stop here. We'll continue from page 44 in the next session, inshallah. There were just a number of questions that we want to go through, inshallah. Assalamu alaikum. If I lent someone money and the khums date arrives, is khums applicable on this amount, or is it forgiven or postponed? And if postponed, is it postponed to the date I receive back this money or to the next khums date? If it's the next khums date, then what if this money is spent by then? Well, here, if the money was not khumsated, you hadn't given its khums. For example, it was from the annual gains of that given year that you had lent the money. So you earned a monthly salary, and a part of that 1 month's salary you had lent to someone. That's your annual gains. So it's not khumsated yet. Here, now you've given it to them, it needs to be khumsated, but you don't have it with you yet. And then when they give it you back, it's now that khums date has passed. Here the ruling is that when you receive the money back, there and then, immediately you have to pay the khums. Immediately. Why? Because at the time of the khums date, it was your duty to pay, but it wasn't in your hands. But the chumps was levied and the duty to pay was there. Now, when you receive that money, you immediately have to pay it. You don't wait for the next chumps date. And then, what if I sent payment for something and the goods for which I paid arrived to me after my chumps date? Do I deduct this expense from the chumps? Well, yeah, well, look, no, here, this example is the example, remember the fridge example, where you pay it from the annual gains of this year, but you're going to use it until next year, not this year. That goes against the principle of unity, one of the principles of the Ma'one. You can only deduct it from your annual, you can only deduct that Ma'one from your annual gains, which is going to be used this year. If you're going to use the fridge next year, then you would have to pay its chums. So here, the chums of the payment, that you've sent, the chums of this payment must be given because you're giving money for next year's ma'one, because you receive the goods in the next chums year. And that goes against the principle of unity amongst the principles of the ma'one. And I mean, there may be exceptions. For example, the religious authorities have given examples such as, for example, if you won't be able to buy one next year, or if it's seen as negligence towards your family, but this does not apply in this particular question. What if I sent payment? Same question. What if I've sent payment for something before the chums date, and the payment reached the intended place after the chums date? Do I deduct this expense from the chums? Okay, now here, if one has received the goods this year, but the check, for example, arrives to that destination, the seller, the following year, the following chums year, there's no chums here. So it would be okay if you can deduct it. You can deduct the expense from the annual gains, there's no problem. And the reason is because this is seen as a debt for a ma'one of this year. That thing which you received was a ma'one, I'm assuming. And now you've received it, and now you're in debt in relation to it. But that debt, it reached after the chums year, that's okay. There's no chums. No chums will be applied. As I say, we haven't discussed debts yet, but this is one of the themes that we would have to, one of the scenarios we would have to explain in more detail. Because the debt of ma'one can be deducted even if, for example, one's year passes. The debt of the ma'one of the previous year can be given without any problem. Salamu alaikum. Suppose there was a certain expectation of me within family or society, and I was able to afford it before. If times have changed and my financial situation has gone down and I cannot easily afford those expectations, and I go ahead and still fulfill them to maintain my reputation and self-respect, would my expenses be considered within ma'una? For example, gifting something valuable to a brother-in-law and sister in their first anniversary because everyone else is, or giving a lavish, respectable dinner to special guests beyond my financial means. Well, here, yes, the extra here will have the chums levied upon them. But when you say it's to protect my reputation and self-respect, maybe it's within your status to have such a respect, and then giving such a dinner may be okay. It's very difficult for me to enter the particularities here. This, you would have to analyze it yourself, and it's the responsibility of the duty bound. I can only give you the general principles here. But if you want to act on precaution, yes, give the chums on that extra that you've spent. Yes, I've heard there's no israf on spending on fragrance. Is this true? No, it's not true. Those traditions that you may have come across, they're just applying that fragrances or also a ma'une. That's the emphasis on those traditions. But to say there's no israf, that would be incorrect. So it would be it would come under ma'une, fragrances. Yeah, I mean, assuming, but I mean, if you overdo it, it would be israf. So that which is on a par with you, however much you purchase, if it's on a par with your status, it would be okay. If it's beyond your status, that extra would have to be khumsated. Today's fragrance or chemicals, for example, Western brands like Chanel, Dior, would they also come under this category? Or hadiths only refer to natural fragrances, for example, essential oils, in brackets, oud, sandalwood, rose, etc. Although oud, I don't think it's an oil. Anyway, but yes, ruling-wise, they will be appended to these natural fragrances that you mentioned. Chanel, Dior, they'll be appended and they join those natural fragrances. So the ruling is the same. Is spending on expensive gemstones with the intention of acquiring recommended needed benefit for oneself, as described within Islam or elsewhere, for example, ruby, emerald, would this be counted within ma'une if they are above our financial budget? Well, if it's beyond your financial budget and your status, it's beyond you, so it won't be seen as a ma'une. What about if it's spent on gemstones within our budget, for example, aghir? I would consider, although these examples is given, it's in relation to the questioner. Ruby may be very normal for another person, or emerald may be not within their status. As I said, every person has to be seen differently. Aghir, here, if it was within our budget, I would consider category A as a recommended need personally. Well, yes, that's okay. If it's within your budget, that aghir would be this onyx, so to speak, would be a ma'une. And so there's no khums there. Is spending on things that are not within our needs, for example, gemstones not mentioned within Islam, but within our normal financial budget, would it fall under ma'une? Or let's say buying chocolates. It's not a need, but it's within my budget. So here, no. Here, they won't. The khums here, there's no need to give its khums. Yes. So here, right, this is a very good point. If it's only one or two, because here it's not a need, and the question arises, it's within my budget, it's within on a par with my status, but it's not a need. And therefore, if it's not a need, and I purchase two bars of chocolate, or purchase two gemstones which aren't recommended at all, but it's within my budget, is the khums levied here? And here, one can say that if it's one or two gemstones, or a few chocolate, there's not excessive a number. This is part of recreation. It's a natural recreation or leisure that you deserve as part of your ma'une. And therefore, that would be okay, and there's no khums levied. But if they are excessive in number, okay, it's a recreation which then enters the jurisdiction of israf. If that happens, then the extra would have to be khumsated. But recreation itself, in Arabic, refah, that is okay. And it's within your budget. You don't need it, but it's a recreation. You can consume and use, and that, because recreation is part of your livelihood expenses. But when it becomes excessive, then it becomes israf. And that's not allowed. Okay. When the khums date arrives, is it the date we calculate our khums and separate it from the rest of the money? Or is it the date we necessarily also have to send it to the marja? Or is it the date it has to also necessarily arrive to the marja as well? It's none of them. Yes, we went through this in the last session. It depends on the first income, the nature of the first income becoming actualized. If you go back to the last session, session number 9. Does giving extravagant charity or doing israf in charity cause it to remain under Ma'oneh. Well, if it exits the boundaries of Ma'oneh, according to the majority, then the Chums would have to be given. It's Israf, and the Chums would have to be given, according to the majority. And at the question, if we give our Chums to someone believing that person to be reliable, to forward it to its destination, and if it fails to reach its destination, either to the manager or to the Sadat, if in relation to the Sahm Sadat, then are we liable to collect and resend that amount all over again, although we had done the best sincerely on our part earlier? Well, if that someone that you mention is a representative of the marja, of the religious authority, no liability exists. You don't have to resend. If not, however, yes, you have to resend. That's the whole point, that they enjoin you to give the money to the marja, because then the responsibility will fall under him. You've done your duty. Does delay of sending khums to its destination result in penalties, kafares, kafar being atonements, or sins? Well, it's definitely a sin if there was no legitimate excuse, and that would be affecting you, that sin, moment to moment, until you repent and actually give the khums. But no atonement or no kafare exists. Let's see if we can do one final question. If I have a mobile phone which is enough for my necessity and not giving me trouble, for example, iPhone 5, but I just wish to replace it with the latest model, iPhone 12, does this come under Ma'oneh, or I have to take out Khums on the difference? If it's not Israf, it's okay. That's the first thing. The general formula is that which one purchases, in this case a phone, it's either a necessity or it's a recreational, you know, something, a recreational norm for you. Or it's Israf. So it's either a necessity, there's no problem. It's like a Ma'oneh, the Ma'oneh embraces it, there's no Khums on it. Or it's Rifah, you're using it as a recreational item which you need, but also the extra things which is on a par with your recreational status, for example. Or if the recreational status extends, if that which you're purchasing extends beyond your recreational status, then that would be regarded as extravagance, israf. Anything which is extravagant, a khums of it has to be given. So the first two, if it's by necessity or refah, would be within the jurisdiction of Ma'oneh, there's no khums levied on it. But if the refah exceeds to a degree that it qualifies as israf, its khums has to be paid. What if it's under my financial budget? Well, I refer you to the previous answer. What if it's considered very normal of my social status or within my society to carry this replacement upgrade out every year? Well, that's okay then. You've answered the question. It's very normal for you, for such a person of your status. Society will deem it very normal for you to make those upgrades. And then he says, or she says, let's consider it again that it's not necessary, as my current phone doesn't give me any problems nor lacks any feature. P.S. I've just created a hypothetical situation for the question, and the case could be for cars, etc. And the answer is the same as given before. The answer is exactly the same. It's either necessity, refah, that's under the Ma'oneh, no khums levied. If the refah exceeds and enters the jurisdiction of Israf, then it would have to be khumsated. With the phone, just to make things easier for you, I think that would be, if it's normal for you, there's no need to give it and there's no need to worry. But if you then have two or three phones, then that may give you cause to worry a bit, at least khums-wise. Okay, I think that ends the questions. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammad wa alihi at-tahirin.